Hello, welcome to Convergent Dialogues. This is Xavier Bonilla. On this episode, I'm talking with Andrew Borriga. Andrew is a writer, editor, and author whose writing has appeared everywhere. The New York Times, The New Yorker, The Atlantic, Paris Review, Daily Beast, many outlets. He's also taught fiction and nonfiction writing to students of all ages, elementary school, college age, and also to incarcerated men in Florida. And he is the author of the new novel, Victim, which is the topic of discussion today. We started by talking about how he approaches writing novels versus nonfiction pieces and some of the background of, you know, why it took him a decade to write the novel and kind of going back to it and coming, you know, doing all the different edits and drafts and rewrites. We talk about how he chose the themes for the novel, personal influence on fictional characters, the evolution of characters, using tragedy and victimhood for clout. We talk about dealing with social justice themes, being shaped by the environment, stereotypes, how we can talk about experiences honestly, and many other topics. Andrew's novel is fantastic. I really, really enjoyed it. Very, very readable. You know, we talked about it in the conversation, but, you know, he wanted to write a good story, and then all of the themes kind of came out of it. And he treats them, I think, fairly, honestly, and it really is just a great story that has a lot of meaning, but it's not hitting you over the head with one version or idea he wants you to get. He kind of just like shows you and lets it come out. And that's why I really wanted to get him on the podcast and talk about that process and how he does it. And he's such a very, very, very wonderful person, very, very kind, very, very bright in a lot of ways. And I really just enjoyed the conversation. And, you know, it's a lot of the times the episodes are, you know, pretty heavy on history or science. And it's very nice to just kind of take a break sometimes and just talk about a story and talk about certain themes in society. And it just made for a great conversation. And I really, really enjoyed my time talking with him. As always, you can find this conversation and all other conversations at convergentdialogues.substack.com. I'm also on YouTube. So get over there, subscribe, like, follow, share with your friends. And big thanks for all the contributions people make. And now I bring you Andrew Borriga. I'm here with Andrew Borriga. Andrew, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I'm greatly looking forward to speaking with you.
Likewise, man. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You have a really, really great book. It was a fun read, an easy read. That book is called Victim, and it's a novel, which is, I don't get too many novels on the podcast. So it's fun. I do love novels. Kind of the classics and then contemporary stuff. So, and it was great. I mean, there's obviously a bunch of messages that are going on. So we'll get into all of that. So before we do, why don't you just tell listeners the best things to know about you, kind of your personal or your professional or whatever background that makes most sense. Yeah, just kind of tell us a bit what's most relevant for you.
Yeah. Writer, grew up in the Bronx, lived there for about 25 years or so in New York City, left, currently live in Miami with my wife and kids. In addition to the fiction, I've also done quite a bit of journalism. I started writing for newspapers when I was 16 in the Bronx, my local paper, and I've freelanced and or been on staff at probably four or five different places by now. You know, New York Times, Atlantic, New Yorker, set of staff at the Daily Beast for a while. Some regional papers mm-hmm. out here in Florida. So I've had both a foot in both worlds of the nonfiction and fiction universe. The novel mm-hmm. took me about 10 years of me, you know, just working on it in the mornings before my day mm-hmm. jobs. So it's been a labor of love, and it's cool to finally see it out in the world.
That's great. I'm sure I can hear an answer to this, but which one do you like more? Is it? I'm sure they're different, yeah, obviously, etc. Yeah, yeah. But which one do you kind of? Which one do you like?
Early on in my writing career, like really early, when I was like a teenager, journalism was what I was most focused on, mostly because mm-hmm. that was the the path that I saw in front of me to make a living out of writing.
Sure.
I didn't really, you know, I didn't know any novelists or anything like that. I don't really know journalists either, but I knew the Daily News and the New York Post was around me, and you know, and I was like, I can do this, you know, be in these papers. And then I'd say about like second, third year college is when I really started falling in love with fiction. I started taking creative writing classes, write my first short stories. And then there was a period where I was sort of back in journalism, you know, full time, doing a lot of freelance work, working on staff at places. And the fiction and stuff kind of was off to the side a little bit. And so, but now, you know, it's really my main thing. I think on, to be honest with you, fiction has probably been like the one who's been the biggest love of all. But there was a period early on where like I was just focused on journalism and wasn't really thinking about writing novels or short stories or anything like that.
Do you feel it's like there's things you can do or say, I don't want to say better, but we'll go with it, better in fiction than you can in like a opinion piece or an investigative piece or whatever it is, you know, like, you know, we'll talk about many of the themes in the book, but it's like, I was reading it and I was like, you know, this could be a pretty juicy op-ed piece or something, or a controversial one. And then it just goes away. But like when it's a story, it kind of like has a little bit more staying power, I guess. Do you feel like there's more freedom or more things you can say in a story than you can with just a nonfiction?
They're entirely different beasts. You know what I mean? And I think the beauty of fiction is that, you know, you can ground ideas and questions you have about big themes or big topics in characters, and ideally well-rounded, you know, characters who feel real, you know, who can maybe sort of be stand-ins almost for like yourself or other people, you know, or other, you know, people you've seen out in the world. And, you know, you can kind of allow them to, these characters to clash and interact and like play off of each other in ways that you just can't do in a nonfiction story. You know what I mean? So there's that. And also I think there's just like a looseness to the language that I love in fiction. I can do whatever, you know what I mean? When I'm writing an investigative piece, like I'm bound by whatever I'm receiving from the people I'm interviewing or the facts that I'm finding. An op-ed piece, you have more latitude, but also I think, I don't know, from like, there's op-ed writers I enjoy to read, but I'm also cognizant that like their ideas are like heavily being force-fed to you, you know? It's just like, my opinion. Whereas in the novel, I'm not really, you know, I have my own ideas about some of these things I'm exploring, or I have my own questions, but I wasn't trying to be sort of heavy handed and like, this is what it is. And, you know, I'm right and you're wrong, you know, kind of thing, which I feel like is a little bit almost inherent to like a nonfiction. You have to convince. And I wasn't necessarily trying to convince people of anything in the novel. I was just exploring. And I think you know, fiction allows you to do that a little bit better.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree with that. So, I mean, the book is, you know, it covers a lot of themes: race, class, migrants, you know, the hustle lifestyle, drugs, you know, there's a different things of violence, you know, there's different things in there. But mostly I think it's a lot of, obviously, you know, race, class, stuff like that. And so kind of what you're saying there, like, did you like intend to write this story saying, you know, I want to talk about these themes and I'll just put them in a story? Or was it just, I'm writing a story and this is popping, that's popping out. Okay, here we go. This is good. Let me run with that. I guess what was the kind of underlying ethos, if you will, of like how the story came about? Some people do write stories that way where it's like, I want to tell this message and so I'm going to do it this way. And other people, it's like, well, if it happens, it happens. Or maybe it's a little bit half of this, half of that. So how did those themes come out, I guess?
Yeah, it's more of the latter. It wasn't, you know, the novel really evolved over the 10 years I was working on it. It started out between these two characters, Javi and Gio. Javi's the protagonist. Gio's his best friend. They grew up in the same neighborhood in the Bronx, and they take two drastic paths in life. Gio ends up going to join a gang and going to prison. Javi ends up going to a nice college and becomes a writer for these kind of esteemed publications. And that story, that core story was more so just my story. You know, that was like my kind of path. Like I had friends I grew up with, and we took those different paths. And then I was just kind of like always thinking about how did that happen and why, and, you know, and that led me to later on, as I went to college and read more, I started to think more about these bigger structural things that I hadn't really thought about before. So it was just trying to like answer, like, or understand what was going on there, or explore it. And then as I started to gain more experience in the media, writing for publications, freelancing, working with various editors, annoyance kind of with like the diversity conversation happening and what it was actually looking like in practice, like as a writer, started to just kind of irk me. And I was just, these like questions about authenticity and identity were starting to become so powerful and important. This is, you know, obviously around 2015, 2016, Trump, you know, and Twitter is like huge, and people are getting canceled, and people are like saying you're part of this identity and you're not. And, you know, we're having as a society all these like crazy, interesting conversations around these topics. And I was, as a writer, as a journalist, I was kind of observing all of this and also moving around in the media space where a lot of this was happening in these newsrooms and so forth. So I think these ideas started to kind of work themselves in to the story. Because I already envisioned Javi as a writer and all that. And because he was based off of my own experiences, you know, so it kind of happened organically. Like I didn't go in thinking that I was going to write this story like that. And then I would say when I finally settled on the premise, you know, this idea of a young kid from the Bronx who realizes that his background has some, his trauma, the hardships that he's faced have some like currency in this academic world, in this media world. And he decides to like pimp that out to get that and get to a fast track to the place where he wants to be. When I hit that premise, then I started to like sort of tie things together that were already kind of floating out there and like really funnel it toward this vehicle. Like, okay, this is the story. And like, let me pull all these pieces in and discard the ones that are really not working anymore, play up some things and play down some things. So it was more of an evolution, you know, I think characters evolve sort of naturally to become, not stand-ins for like arguments or things like that, but they were already there. And I was like, you know, like a character like Anaïs, who's Javi's girlfriend that he meets in college. And she's sort of this like, you know, you might think of her like a stereotypical social justice warrior type, who activists on campus and all that, but kind of different ideals in reality and practice. She was someone who was already there and had some of these inklings, but then I was like, okay, like I can play her up in certain ways, contrast her off of Javi. So it was a really interesting evolution that occurred during just the writing, and I think just living during the period that I was kind of writing about.
Yeah, I typically really dislike stories like this, where that's why I was kind of surprised I really liked it, because in one way or the other, right? If it's a novel that's trying to show, elements of oppression and systemic racism and patriarchal thing, like any of these kind of big things. And when you try to put that into art, whether that's, you know, in written form of fiction, things like that, like it's fine to talk about those things and those issues, but it just feels really forced. It's very on the nose. I don't really like it in film either. It just feels like, it doesn't feel thoughtful. It just feels like, okay, here it is. And you just, but I didn't feel that way with this book. And that's why I was like, oh, I kind of went into it just kind of like, okay, blind. I didn't really know anything about it. I just kind of read it. And I started to kind of see it a little bit. And then I was like, oh, okay, but this feels natural. Like, this feels organic. You know, I could get what you were saying, like the kind of the ideas, at least kind of, you know, kind of point the light on these kinds of things. I was like, okay. But it didn't feel like one way or the other, there was a message that was trying to come across. So like when I get to the end of the book and it's like, yes, I need to feel really terrible, you know, or I need to feel really bad for this person, or I need to really rethink how I do things. And the story showed me that I need to be this way. A lot of these books have an agenda.
Yeah.
That didn't feel that way.
Yeah.
On this book, it felt, kind of like how you described it. That's why I was curious. It felt organic. Like, there were some obvious things that were like, yeah, I want to make this point or whatever, but it was also like, okay, but it's more than that. Like, it's not just trying to, and it felt always more like exposing isn't the right word, but more of just like, yeah, like I'm going to shine a light on this thing or this interaction, or we know someone like that or similar to that. Okay. And really just kind of sitting with it and being like, okay, well, what does that look like, you know, for people and for us? And so it doesn't really, I didn't come away with you wanting the reader to like think or believe a certain way. It was just kind of like, well, there it is,
yeah.
You know? And it's also really cool because, I mean, I obviously am not going to give any details away about the story, but you don't really know where it's going. And it's like, oh, okay. Like that's, and it feels like, very kind of natural. There's not a twist, but there's a kind of like a shift in the direction. And then it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I could see that. And then yeah, how it ends is pretty nice. So I was curious about that. I was like, yeah, did he set out to write about these issues, or did that just like come about?
Yeah.
Or so I guess kind of with that is you said 10 years, and I know some of that probably is, you know, you had a day job and you had bills to pay and, you know, mouths to feed and whatever. I mean, I get that. But is there a reason why it took 10 years, or you just going away at it? And then finally it kind of was like, I think I'm done. Kind of like, why the decade more or less did it take?
Yeah. I wish if I had a clear answer, I could avoid that again, which is what I'm actively trying to. But I think, first off, thank you for what you said about the book. I really appreciate that. That's, you know, that's, that was a goal of mine to hear exactly that, you know.
It's hard to do.
That's part of the answer to your question, is that it took that long because I was reading a lot of contemporary fiction myself and having the same reaction, and feeling like coming away from, you know, novels and thinking, you know, okay, I get it. Okay, I know you're trying to tell me what I'm supposed to think, and this person's supposed to be bad, and this person's supposed to be good, and you know, and it was just becoming a lot, you know.
You just lose the creativity out of it. You lose the art of it.
Yeah, you know, like I opened the book to fall in love with it and fall in love with the characters in the world, and often I would be jammed right out of it because of the bigger point or idea thing that is like so clearly trying to be made. And I would say, you know, I could have picked up a nonfiction book if that's what I was looking for. You know what I mean? I picked up a novel. Exactly. Like, that's not what a novel is. And so I, you know, one of the things that I really wanted to do is not write that type of story. You know, and so part of the reason I took that long is because I wrote probably 5 or 6 versions of the novel, entirely different versions, same characters, but like different permutations, different plots. And either it felt too, not forced, but sort of naive, or it felt like too sentimental in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then it felt too contrived because I was starting to think about these ideas, but like forcing them in a way that didn't feel natural. You know, so it just took a lot of trial and error to finally feel like, okay, this feels like a natural story now. You know, it doesn't feel forced. And also to get to know the characters, right? Because I think that's a big thing that was important to me as well, is not just have these like straw men there, you know, who are stand-ins for a certain type of person, which is something that would also annoy me in a lot of contemporary novels. It was like, okay, this is like the bad white person, or this is like the good, you know, whatever. And it's like, you know, I wanted the people to feel real. And even if they were doing things that were going to like disgust you or annoy you, hopefully you could understand them still, you know, or it would feel like, okay, I could understand why they would do that. You know, I understand why, you know, his girlfriend is the way she is. And even though she does some things that are kind of weird, you could also see she's actually an idealist at heart, you know, and she's sort of in it for the right reasons. And it all of that just like complicates things. And it makes the reader sort of do more of the work of like figuring out what's going on and coming to their own conclusions. And that's the type of fiction that I love to read. If I love to read a story where I don't really know exactly where it's going, but I'm into it. I'm into the characters. And then I come away thinking like, okay, what was going on? You know, like, and you still think about it, you know, and those are the stories that last and you remember. And so I was really, you know, I had kind of grand ambitions to write something that people would think about and hopefully remember and, you know, talk about and, you know, and that shit takes a long time.
It does. Yeah. I mean, I have great respect for people that can. It's like, how can you think about all of those characters and give them motivations? I mean, if it's done well, and it's really, really incredible, especially because you're having to, your theory of mind has to be pretty crazy, right? You have to really be able to be like, okay, what is this person's perspective? Like, not me, like this person, like, right. You know, and a lot of the times people do base it off of, you know, people they know, but also like, you know, sometimes people will use things from, wow, I mean, people don't have newspapers anymore, but you know, a newspaper or, you know, something they see a story in a news outlet or something like that. And it's like, oh, that's, imagine what their backstory is. And then they just make the story based on, you know, whatever it might be. So, I mean, I think that's, I mean, it's obviously, you know, it takes a lot of time. So I guess the thing I always am curious about, and you don't have to give it away if you don't want to, but how much of this was based on your own life experiences? So I assumed, this is my assumption, that, you know, the main protagonist, Javier, is, you know, based off of at least elements of your life. Yeah. There's a lot of overlap there, but I'm sure there's things that are not. So it's not what's that called? It's not autobiographical.
No.
It's not any of that. But how much of it did you pull? And even like the other people, like, you know, maybe the main girlfriend that's in the book was like 10 girlfriends you had before all put together, or stories you heard of people with their dating life, or there's like, you know, teachers in there, mm-hmm. and there's a mom in there, and there's, you know, and there's dad in there in the beginning, you know, all these things, like, you know, where was all that inspiration coming? Mostly for the main character, mm-hmm. like how much of you is in it? And then just generally all the other characters that, you know, we see in the book.
Yeah, it's a question I actually don't mind answering. And I feel it's always funny that like some writers will get like, you know, why would you think, you know what I mean? It's like, I mean, when I read a novel, I always assume that the protagonist is not the writer, but it's like probably close to it. You know what I mean? Or it's like some, you know, it's natural, right? So for Javi, when I first started writing him, he was a lot closer to me. And I think that was a part of why the novel never worked in the beginning, was because I was trying to protect him a lot. I was trying to make sure that he didn't come off as the bad person on the page, because I was so worried about, you know, what people would say online, or what my readers would, you know, extrapolate from him to think about me. And so that took a while to get over. I was young. I was like 23, 24, 25, 26, whatever. So I cared about stuff like that. And then as I got older, I just didn't. And that allowed me to separate myself from Javier a lot. And part of that was sort of imagining him as a alternative version of myself in a lot of ways. So, you know, I did grow up wanting to write. I did grow up reading and, you know, having these sort of ambitions as well. And I did enter the media and all these things and wrote for these places, magazines and stuff that sort of like the rag, right? But where we differ is that when I started to get these opportunities, or this like sense that I was kind of being pigeonholed to writing these sort of only diversity, trauma, like tragedy kind of stories, you know, hurricane shootings, like poverty, pictures of poverty, like that. Like I was just getting the same types of stories. I started to personally recoil a little bit, you know, and that's when I started retreating back into fiction and thinking I feel like I'm hitting a wall. And this is like, if I'm going to get opportunities, it's going to look like this. And if I pitch anything else, it's a little more nuanced, a little out of the box. They're not going to let me write it. They don't really want to hear that side. They don't really hear that like full perspective or nuanced voice. And so I imagine Javi as somebody who did the opposite, right? Like he also saw what was happening, saw the doors that were opening for him. And instead of sort of being like on his principles saying like, I don't want to do this, this feels weird. He was like, all right, that's what you want. I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give it to you really well. I'm going to stretch the truth. I'm going to just go far and beyond. But I'm going to do it with a sense of I'm smarter than you. And I sort of, I'm playing you. You know, you think you're playing me, but I'm playing you. And then eventually I'm going to get to where I want to be. And I just, like, once I landed on that, I loved that concept because it allowed me to go and play with all these ideas and sort of like put him in situations that I was never in and think things that I never had to, you know, do things I never did. But at the same time, you know, give him the agency and the like freedom that I think the previous versions of Javier was missing, you know, because he was trying to stay in this like safe little box. I was just like, he's going to be a quote unquote bad or unlikable character. And now I'm just going to let him be that and like release him and sort of like, you know, so that just, it became fun to do that, you know? So he's sort of like, yeah, like the Andrew that could have been, you know, if I had taken this other path, it was just like, all right, you know? But then, you know, other characters, a lot of them are combinations of people that I've known. Like Gio is probably like two or three friends that I had growing up, as well as some of my current friends that are in better positions in life and doing well, but just in the way they talk and the dialogue and all that. But his life story, more so, you know, friends that I actually did grow up with who did either join gangs or get into drugs and have these like really harrowing things that they had to live through, but then kind of persevered in their own way and sort of like didn't necessarily come out great in the end, but I don't know, like they weren't these caricatures that I would sort of see in the media represented, you know, that they were supposed to look like either. So that was him. And, you know, so down the line, I think a lot of the characters are either people that I knew or like a few people that I knew. I'm trying to think if there's anybody that like I just plucked from, you know, like a news article or bulletin or something. I think parts of Anaïs are like maybe women that I didn't actually date or know, but had heard of through other friends, you know, or read about, you know. So, you know, I borrowed a lot, you know, from here and there, but they, for the most part, people were grounded in either a few friends that I have or family members or friends of friends or, you know, people I was around in some way. And the beauty of fiction is just being able to take all these pieces and like jam them together into one person and, you know, sort of create this new version. But it does take some time to smooth that out and like make them feel like a real person at the same time, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I usually assume that it's combinations of things like that. I'm not trying to necessarily compare here, but, you know, and obviously you worked on this for a while, but I wonder if I was curious for your thoughts as if A, if you see it and B, how you feel about it. So there's definitely pieces of the story or thematically there's some elements of it that seem very similar to American Fiction, yeah, which is the film that came out recently. And obviously books take a while. And I was like, man, I wonder if he also sees that. Yeah. And if he's like kind of upset by it, like, damn, this came out at the wrong time. Damn it, this is too close. People are going to think I'm ripping off this movie now.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you've seen the movie.
Yeah, and, I enjoyed it. You know, and it's funny, like, I was writing like the version that is actually in the novel, like the novel now, most of that was written between 2020 and 2022. And a lot of that time while writing it, I was like, I don't know how people are going to react to this. You know, I was a little bit like, I don't know. This might ruffle feathers. This might not be taken well, you know. And so it's so interesting to see that there were a couple other people, you know, not only Cord Jefferson, the folks who made American Fiction, but also, you know, R.F. Kuang. Who wrote Yellowface. There were other people thinking about these things and the same issues at the same time. And so, yeah, I think it's cool that it's all coming out, to be honest, at the same time. Like, I had better chances of adapting it into a movie or something. If it wasn't, you know, of course, if American Fiction hadn't just come out. But other than that, I mean, I think it's been cool to see that like other people were having the same sorts of thoughts and reactions to what was happening in the culture at the same time. And that a few of us were like willing to just start writing about it and, you know, seeing kind of taking the leap to just like putting it into a story. Because at the time, I think that was kind of a, you know, it was a little bit of a risky thing to do. You know, so it's nice to see that it's being received pretty well. I mean, I had no idea how this was going to be received, to be honest with you, but it's been quite well, you know? And I think a lot of it is because people are kind of ready to have these conversations and maybe were for a while and like waiting for these types of books and movies to come out. I'm happy to be part of this little bubble, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I want to ask you about some of the other themes, but I guess one of the other main characters is the girlfriend in the story. And she seems, I mean, I can remember at certain parts when I was reading, you know, some of the things, you know, rolling my eyes, and, oh boy, I've heard this, yep. Or that feels very familiar. Oh boy. I mean, did you want to kind of have a character to sort of personify quote unquote woke ideas or very progressive? And really, I mean, I think it's fine that people have those ideas. I'm not trying to say anything necessarily negative about that, but hearing how the ideas kind of become more important than relationships or people is really how I saw that coming out. It's like, okay, but I'm right here with you. Stop talking at me about how I need to do this and I shouldn't do this. And well, that's this, and this is this. And like all of these, like, you know, ideological talking points. It's like, well, I'm as a person right here. And I felt like there was a lot of that. Obviously there's, you know, we learn more about her motivations, his interactions, how he kind of changes things, you know, the fact that it's a romantic relationship for a time and not a, you know, just like a friend or something, I thought was probably right. So yeah. Did you want to put those kind of things? Like, I need a character to kind of like personify this, or you just wrote the girlfriend and was like, okay, you know what? This kind of fits that she would have this. How did you kind of play with trying to, you know, personify those kind of ideas?
Yeah. I would say it was probably a bit of both. Like, she was always someone who I wanted to be different, you know, than Javi, that he would meet her in college. She would come from a little bit more of a higher status class background. And then I think at the beginning, I was really just trying to explore that, like the idea that they're both Latinos, but like, their backgrounds are extremely different. And so even though, you know, maybe from like a white or larger mainstream perspective, you would imagine like they just click, they're the same type of person. They actually have a lot of differences that kind of get in the way of their relationship. So I kind of wanted to explore like that, like exploring those class differences was always kind of there. And then I think I realized that she could also sort of be a sort of vehicle for the type of person who is very loud, adamant about their ideals, you know, online in the streets, but then like at home is a very different person, you know, or when it comes down to it and they have to make real choices about where they live or what they do for work or where they frequent, they make very different choices that don't always align with the way that they speak in public about what, you know, what's important to them. And that felt kind of important to explore, because I think often that is my issue with some of these, like, people who are, you know, I hate the word woke, but it's like a good, you know, offhand or whatever, is there's often a tendency to be like, yeah, you know, defund the police, and then, but not in my neighborhood, you know, but if I get in trouble, I'm calling the cops. Right. Or yeah, like, we need to fix education, but don't send your kids in the hood to my school, because I don't want to go that far. Right. You know? So I would always pick up that, like, there's a weird, sort of irony to their positions and how much they're willing to scream about them. But then when it came to actually living them out, it's a whole different story. And that sort of fit naturally with Anais, you know. I started, like, when I would go back over previous drafts of her, I would see little inklings of that I hadn't really picked up on before. And I was like, oh, I could just, like, ratchet this up a little bit, or take this, you know, pull this a little further than I originally did. And that was that just came with time, just spending time with her, thinking about who she really is and what are her motivations, and, you know, and trying to, like, draw out some of these differences within her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I really liked it, because it was nice to see more of. It's always nice when you get with a character, like, you get them at first, right? And you get what's in your face and how, kind of that first impression, and then as you get to know them, you're like, oh yeah, okay, I really hated this character. I really didn't like this person, but now I'm learning more about it. Okay, I'm a little more sympathetic, or I can empathize more, or vice versa. You know, you hear, you know, I really like this person. They're really, you know, whatever. And then you learn a little bit more. And you're like, oh, maybe I don't. Kind of like, that's frustrating, because I did like them. And you feel that, you know, when people watch shows or films or read books, you can, I think good character development is doing that, is being able to say, like, okay, like, you know, people are complicated, and we all got, you know, stuff going on, and we all have a history and a past or other things. And it's like, okay, how do we, you know, pull that out? And so it's how you do it. It's just good pacing in that way. It's very, very nice. So, she becomes a little bit more interesting. She's not just a kind of, you know, caricature almost of all of these other ideas. So you talk about in the beginning of sorts, and this is kind of like sets the tone, if I remember correctly, I think in the book, it's very much like, okay, I'm going to tell you a story, and let me tell you all this. It's kind of like that. And you mentioned the trifecta of the grift, right? Which is skin color, birthplace, and tragedy. And a lot of the times people love to use this for, like, a kind of victim porn, right? Where it's just like, yeah, you're really victimized. Oh, yes, you have this kind of thing, or this hard of a life, or these other things, and you're Black, or and you're Latin, or and you're, you know, a woman or whatever. And, you know, oh, you're from, you know, you migrated from here, or you were in a refugee camp, or, and none of those things in and of themselves, again, are wrong, or it's not wrong to talk about them, or it's not, you know, it's none of those things. But it's where it's kind of like manipulated or massaged in a way where people are kind of, you know, it becomes a sort of thing that you talk about almost like in a depersonalized way, where then that's the whole thing that you're always pushing, and then people use that and stuff. So talk about those kinds of things, or why you wanted to emphasize, you know, obviously skin color and or race, birthplace or place of origin. And then if there's, you know, tragedy in somebody's life, you know, why did you see these things as pretty prevalent?
Yeah, I think I was trying to set from the beginning the stakes, or like the awareness that someone like Javi has that because he is a brown man, because he has experienced tragedy, because he comes from a place that is like known worldwide for like, you know, a tough neighborhood or area, right? He understands that he has this sort of quote unquote authenticity that is in vogue, right? And sort of get at how I saw a lot, like I think a lot of people can use these markers, not just to say I'm from these places, but like, believe me, because I am this or this or this. And there was this weird like hierarchy that I started to see emerging, you know, in the, I'd say 2013, 2014 until probably very recently, where there was like a pyramid, you know, and it was like, if you're, and who was that? Who was the top of the pyramid was like constantly changing. It was like, if you're, you know, a black woman, maybe you were at the top at one point, but now it's like, if you're black trans woman or some, you know, like they were like different, you know, hierarchies.
How many intersectionality
points? Yeah, like various intersectionality points. And it was like, you add them all up and it was like, that was the person who was, you know, these are the group that's at the top. Right. And like you're saying, it's like, it's not necessarily like, I'm not saying it's bad that if you are, you know, that is your identity, that you talk about it or whatever. I think what was weird is that if there was a discussion or some debate, it was just like, you automatically defer to whoever is on this, the top of this, like, theoretical pyramid, you know? And, you know, I would just see that happen over and over in various situations. And it was just a weird thing, you know, like that those identity markers are important to you and they're important for you to embody in different ways. But if there's a larger discussion happening, does that always, does it have to be that deference, or does it have to be like the shutting down or you can't speak, or, you know what I mean? And I think that was important to me because I'm fundamentally interested in us as a society, like moving forward in big, in important ways, you know, in our education system. That's extremely important to me. I'm a product of like public schools that weren't always so great. And then went to a place like Cornell. I've seen so many different versions of the system, the public, like the education system. And like, I'm very invested in actually making it better. And I think that a lot of times when we're having these big discussions about issues like education, for example, things get lost when we just start like siloing into these little identity, you know, markers and saying who can speak and who can't speak and who can listen and who can and who's right and who's wrong. And it's like, you know, it's just people yelling at each other. And so I was trying to like get at that and also set for the stakes that, for the reader, you know, Javi, if that is something you believe in, if you believe in that hierarchy, Javi fits that hierarchy, you know? So maybe that will entice you to listen, you know, because he's somebody who could have easily and did in a lot of ways until he's, you know, until people read later and find out what happens, you know, use these things to his benefit, right? And so it was meant to work on a number of different levels, to kind of catch you off guard, to kind of maybe entice you to like want to understand what Javi's saying. But also I think to, you know, I love it at the beginning of the novel, like that's on the first page, to kind of like air out something that I think a lot of people have been thinking about, or, you know, like, why is it that these things will just automatically give you more credibility in our public square right now? Just because, you know, is that like, does that really matter? You know? So I don't know, like I was trying to explore all of that, you know, and I don't think I necessarily have like a specific answer I was trying to lead people to, but I did want to sort of right away grab you and make you think, where are we going here? What, you know, what kind of book is this? And I think, I feel like it has that effect. I've heard that from people.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree. I think it does. And I think it's interesting to like you said earlier, that everyone's kind of noticing these things already. They're noticing certain elements. And, you know, I think, you know, the pendulum swings, you know, one way and then it goes the other. And we sometimes find a way in the middle. I think in a lot of ways, I don't like to do this too much, but, you know, I would say probably second term Obama, I'd say probably between somewhere in 2011, 2012 to like 2014. You know, things seem to be pretty good. I think most people would say things were pretty, you know, okay. I mean, not perfect, but, and then, yeah, you're right. 2015 really was like a kind of explosion of things on campus. Mm-hmm. And then you get, you know, the whole thing with Trump afterwards. And I'm not by any means blaming Trump. I think this, some of this stuff predates Trump for sure.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, he basically, you know, poured gasoline on the fire essentially. So, you know, I mean, like him and the phenomenon don't get a pass here, but I do think it does predate him, and it's kind of irrelevant to him at that point. And then, yeah, I mean, obviously 2020 was a crazy year, super hard year for much of the world and society at large. And obviously here in the US, you know, you had all the stuff, the riots and George Floyd and all that stuff in 2020, and you had the pandemic and you had the election and you had, you know, it was a lot of things. There's a lot of things going on that year. And, but I feel like now, and I think there was a very aggressive, you know, off the coattails of like Me Too, and then you get race put in there, and then you get all this stuff happening on college campuses. I think that, you know, it just was like injected on steroids of everyone looking at everything through identity. And,
yeah.
And of course you get, you know, people in academia, it's like, here I am. Here's my moment. Yeah. So we're here. We've been waiting for, you know, 40 years. We're here. Okay. So you get all the, you know, the folks that do gender studies and race studies and all the different, you know, and they're just, you know, everyone's asking them to come on CNN and MSNBC and, you know, maybe Fox and, you know, and just tell us about this. And it just absolutely exploded. And it's just, you know, and again, everyone's talking about it. And I don't typically like when things move super fast. That doesn't make me a closet conservative, but it, you know, I'm not saying I want things to be the same, but we were moving so quick on these things. We're changing titles. We're creating programs. Right. We're creating, you know, calling people certain things and not. Right. And this is the wrong way to say it. This isn't the right way to say this. And they became very concerned about that. And words are violent.
Right.
You know, let's tear down all the statues and rename everything. Everything was just happening super fast. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait. Let's slow down for a minute and just like take a deep breath and see like what we want to do. And no one was doing that. It was very, very reactionary. And some of that was probably important. Some of that was probably helpful. Some of that probably needed to be done for many years. So I think some of that was good. Definitely a lot of it, I definitely think contributed to, you know, polarization that we see. But all that to say, it does feel now, 4 years later, like it's a kind of, everything's kind of settling now.
Yeah.
Everything's trying to figure itself out. Like, okay, we had the fever coming down from it. Okay, where do we land on this? Let's keep some of this. Let's not keep some of that. You know, maybe we need to add a few more things, but it feels a little bit more settled. And so I think in a lot of ways, you know, your book is trying to do that. Like, you know, like I don't think this book probably could have been written in 2021 or released in 2021. No. I think it would have been, some people might have loved it and other people would have absolutely, you know, just torn you to pieces.
Yeah.
And I think now that it's out now, it's probably more like, and again, kind of like we said, you know, there's other books and films and things like that where it's like, you know, yeah, like you know, this is kind of nuanced. This is complicated. And not everything needs to be that way, but this is obviously, you know, got dynamics. And so it kind of feels sort of timely in the best way possible. I don't think that, you know, a lot of things you were saying, a lot of people will pivot to, well, that's why we should just look at the individual. And I certainly agree. Looking at individual people is super important. But usually the folks that are saying that just want to minimize all of the other things too, culture, mm-hmm. race, mm-hmm. gender, whatever, identity. And it's like, that's awesome. Both. You need both.
You need both.
Yeah, and a lot of people, you know, the people that are saying, just look at the person are minimizing or not, you know, thinking about any of those things. And it's like, okay, well, you do need both. And, I think it is important. I think that's where the novel with the characters and the story as it evolves is, it just kind of tells you like, yeah, someone can be proud of where they're from. They can have different things that happen, but also don't assume just because, you know, they're Latino and they have whatever that, you know, they're going to like cumbia, bachata, eat frijoles and whatever, right? Like maybe they will, or maybe they do like some of that, but it's not, maybe they like, you know, building Warhammers and they love, you know, a Star Trek yeah. and they, all the things that aren't stereotypical, you know, maybe they hate, you know, soccer and mm-hmm. they love, you know, cricket.
Yeah,
you know, whatever, right? Whatever. And a lot of the times that's what that stuff was becoming was, well, if you're black, it means you like this. Right. If you're brown, mm-hmm. it means this. If you're a woman or a man or anyone else, it's this is what it means. And so I think it's just good to have, like, you know, in stories and also in nonfiction stuff, you know, not just being disparaging of those things, but also saying it's this and all these other things from the individual. So, I mean, how do you see how the story does that or how people have interacted with that? Like, are they, is that getting pulled out where people are like, yeah, like, or is it, you're getting a lot of criticism about it or how do you think it is on these, you know, these themes?
No, I don't know. Like, I don't feel like I've really gotten, maybe I haven't seen it, but I don't really feel like I've gotten that anything that bad. My bar is also pretty high because I feel like I'm a person who has thick skin, so I can read and somebody who doesn't like the novel or didn't agree with things or whatever, but like, oh, you know, but you know, even then, most like the people who say who maybe haven't liked it, it's been, you know, they thought it was too heavy on the satire or too light on the satire, or they thought the characters were just unpalatable, you know, things like that. But I think for the most part, the themes that are there, people have engaged with and have enjoyed or have seen the, you know, they appreciate that I was like going for this, even if they didn't really necessarily like it. But I think, you know, going back to your question about sort of the individual versus, I guess, the collective, right, is, I agree. I think it's a bit of both. You know, I think that, my issue with, you know, labels like Latino or like POC or things like that are not that they exist. It's more so that they become a really easy way for people to bunch a lot of wide swath of people into like a little box, you know?
It's a bad heuristic.
Yeah. Sometimes. You know, and just minimize differences and nuances. You know, and I think like it's important that people, you know, if you see a brown Puerto Rican kid or whatever, or a black kid, like you don't like hit them with these assumptions about who they are or what they like or what their life has been like, you know? And I just feel like we were in a place where we're doing a lot of that. I think we're still doing some of that, but I agree probably less than we were like in 2020 or 2021 or so on. And the years before that. So I think that's a positive development, you know? And I think there has been a lot of nuances and interesting characters, for example, in the realm of film and television. It's come in literature. I hope it's coming as well. And I think some of it is, but, you know, a lot of really interesting TV shows are being made. I think Atlanta, for example, is an excellent, really interesting show. Yeah. You know, it's grappling with a lot of things, but the characters are also like weird and, you know, have their own little tics and nuances and things. And you can't really place any one of them in a box. You know, This Fool is a show that I really loved that got canceled, but I thought it was great. LA Cholos, you know, but it was like, you know, former gang members, but they were also really interesting people as well. Right. Abbott Elementary has a really interesting cast, and, you know, so, so I think, I think we're starting to figure out ways to tell these type of stories. And I think people have always wanted to tell them. I would assume that a lot of the reason they haven't been told is not because the people didn't want to write them, but because maybe there was like, I don't know. I guess I personally think the market had more to do with it, or these people, you know.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's only because we've had all of these things part of it more recently that now people on the downfall of it are like, oh, okay. Right. So now we have more of a demand for nuance, these discussions. So now, you know, Netflix and FX and, you know, Apple and all these places are like, let's tell, let's tell that story, you know.
So
it really does, I guess, in some ways, just depend on waiting for the right moment kind of thing.
Yeah.
Of like, okay, you know, so I would imagine there's some of that. You know, maybe people aren't wanting to watch the, you know, the show or the movie that's very in your face, aggressive about. So yeah, we've been doing that.
Yeah,
we've done that. You know, we've kind of oversaturated the market with that, you know, or whatever. And so maybe that's some of it. Yeah, I would agree. I mean, that's, you know, at the end of the day, you know, money makes the world go round, for better or for worse. So, I mean, that's probably a big component of it for sure.
Yeah.
I guess just one other theme, we've talked a little bit about it, but I guess just some more, I guess, like kind of focus here a little bit is something I'm curious about. I guess we can talk about it more generally if you want. It doesn't have to necessarily be tied to the book, although it definitely comes out in the book, is this idea or this notion of people being a product of their environment. Mm-hmm. And environment can be kind of a pretty sort of amorphous of sorts, where it's like, you can be a part of an academic environment. Right. You could be a part of a class structure. You know, so maybe you come from like the hood or, you know, whatever, or maybe you don't, maybe you come from a nice suburban area or whatever, a more rural place. Maybe you're from another country, et cetera. And I guess one of the things that you touch on in the book, and you probably could have pushed even further, right? I would assume, is this idea of what makes a person. And I think you definitely hit on it, is, look, just because, you know, dad was involved in some drugs or in a gang or he got shot or whatever, you grew up in a, you know, wrong side of town, so to speak. Or the opposite, because you grew up, you went to a prep school or you came for money or whatever. It doesn't mean these things. And a lot of the times, if I talk to all of my sociology friends, they'll be like, well, have you seen all of the data that shows that, you know, if we're black and brown people in these areas and zip codes, this means that it's more likely, blah, 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 blah. It was just totally fair. Those are real data points. You know, there's some some okay qualitative data on that for sure. Absolutely. Those things are not, I'm not saying they're not real. But it kind of goes to the point we're saying, it's like, you do have to address the person and seeing what's there. I mean, I have sort of my own story about that, but I'm just curious, either for yourself or generally, what do you think about these ideas of how much we're a product of our environment? I mean, we certainly are, but I'm just asking more of like, do we overplay that? I think sometimes, I think, do we put too much into that? Do we underplay it sometimes and put not enough into it? What do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question. And I think it probably varies person to person, right? But
sure.
I think for me, I'm definitely, I know myself, I'm shaped by my environment, right? Or, you know, I was born in this, like, but then there's even before, like, it's weird because there's differences even within that, right? Like, I can say I was born in the Bronx and people were like grew up there and people might have an idea what that is. Right. But there was like strata, there's like class, you know, like even within that, like my neighborhood wasn't the greatest neighborhood, but there were a lot worse neighborhoods, you know? And so it was like weird to me when I went to these more elitist spaces that everyone assumed that my upbringing, you know, included, you know, gangs and shootouts or like rap videos. I don't know, like these weird things. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, like that was maybe around, or like I would hear about it, or like it's, you know, maybe see the remnants of it or something, or a friend would experience it, or a friend of a friend or whatever. But I was also like a nerd who just liked to read, you know, like I'd take the bus to Barnes and Noble and like, you know, I played baseball and I'd like take the bus and go to the batting cage and spend a lot of time playing on different teams. And, you know, and I'd take the train and go down to the city and go to the Strand sometimes and try to like understand Manhattan, you know, and experience it. Like, you know, I had friends of mine, like we had this friend who's like really accomplished and does well now, but he would just take the train to 42nd Street and just like hang out in Times Square and be like, yo, what are you doing? He's like, I'm on Times Square. We're like, why? You know, like, he's just like, I don't know. I want to be here. You know what I mean? Like he just, and so like, it was, people were just different. Everyone had their own little quirks and everything. And everyone's background, even in this relative quote unquote hood, was so dynamic. You know, I had people in my own building who grew up, like a really good friend of mine, one of the people whose geo is based on, lived on the other side of the hall. And, you know, same place, same everything. But he, like Geo, you know, was raised by his grandmother, who was quite busy and who didn't have time to be on top of him all the time. And so he had all this freedom that, like, I didn't have and I was kind of jealous of. And that, and now looking back, I feel quite fortunate that my single mother was there and on top of me and was like caring about my grades. And so like even within households and apartments in the same building, it's like, what's your parent structure like? What, you know, is your older brother like a gang member or is your older brother like in the anime? You know, like you never know. Right. So I think there's just all these different nuances to people that I personally think we can sometimes, you know, cloud or not give sort of light to by just assuming that someone is from this environment and they must be this way, or the data says this about them and they're going to be, you know, so on and so forth. And, you know, it's kind of limiting to think that way. And it's like,
I totally agree. I will say that sometimes some people don't do folks favors though, mm-hmm. when they try to kind of like capitalize on that.
Yeah, for sure. So, for sure. Yeah.
For example, you know, for a long time, you know, I mean, Jennifer Lopez went real hard, in the paint about I'm from the Bronx. I'm from the Bronx. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, really? Like, yeah. I'm not saying she didn't have a hard upbringing. Yeah. I'm not trying to take away her lived experience. I'm just saying she like reps it real hard. And I think some people have been like, man, you grew up in the suburbs. Yeah. Like, stop trying to say like you were right next to the people, slinging dope or whatever. Like, come on. Like, really? Like, I think just more generally, but I also don't like it because she feeds. And I'm sure some of that is, you know, it's a hustle, all right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're an opportunist. You got to make it. I get it. I get some of that. But I think that's your whole career. Another one that does this is Sofia Vergara. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it's just a Latin stereotype to the max.
Yeah.
Like, she's doing up the accent.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, she's real doing it. Oh, okay, fine. It was cool for Modern Family. It's just like after that, it's just very much does it up. And like a lot of Colombia is a diverse place. Like they're not all that. You know what I mean? Like it's just, and it's just like, or you could even, if you want to go more historic, Lucille Ball's husband from I Love Lucy. What was his name?
Oh, Ricky Ricardo?
Yeah, he was supposed to be Cuban, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Am I right? I could be totally wrong on that. Sorry for anybody that... But it was a stereotype.
Right.
It was a stereotype, right? It was just, and sometimes people do that knowing they know better. They know that's not what it is, mm-hmm. right? Like J-Lo knows to keep, you know, feeding that kind of stereotype mm-hmm. isn't helpful. And it's like, look, you've made your money on it now. Like, I'm not saying you got to change your store or anything, but maybe just don't sell it that hard. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think? I think those folks like that, I'm not trying to pick on, you know, any of these performers or whatever. But it just those are just examples that pop in my head. I mean, you could do this. I mean, there's folks that have been doing this for the Black community where they speak for the Black community mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. they came up from Compton sure, or, sure. you know, whatever. And it's just like, okay, that's not how that is. But sometimes it doesn't help and can actually get in the way of trying to say like, yeah, I was looking at anime or I was, mm-hmm. you know, reading Lord of the Rings. And it's like, oh, yeah. Puerto Ricans read Lord of the Rings. Right? Like, why wouldn't they read Lord? What's nothing wrong with that? What did you think this was? Like, you know, it's just, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like sometimes people kind of get in the way of people being like, hey, this is, people are people, but it's also diverse. To be this doesn't mean you have to do these things or not do these things. You know what I mean? Yeah, what do you think?
I mean, yeah, I think you're right. And I think it's a complicated situation because I think in some cases, you know, I would imagine that a J-Lo probably felt early on in her career that she couldn't express who she really was, you know, or was maybe coached like, hey, if you want to make it, you got to be, you know,
downplay it, roles, minimize it a bit.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think I'm a huge hip hop fan. I see, you know, as you're speaking, I think of hip hop, like rappers do this all the time where they will talk about, you know, how many guns they shot and all these things or where their hood was so hard or whatever. And then, you know, they get exposed like, oh, he went to private school or like, oh, like, you know. He grew up in
the States. This is the thing with Wale, where he kept going on DC, 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 and it's like, dude, you're from like some suburb out in Maryland.
Right.
It's like, you're not from DC. Like, so, come on now. Like,
it's an interesting thing that's going on there. I think in a lot of ways, it's some of the things that the book is speaking to, right? Where it's not like I don't know if it's a victimhood status, but it's like there is real currency to this idea of you're an authentic and you really have gone through some shit and like you're that guy, you know? And like, and if you kind of like Javi says in the beginning, like if you have a couple of these markers and people believe you, you could get pretty far, right? Mm-hmm. If you look the part and you speak the part, you can get pretty far. And people back home might be like, you know, but the mainstream audience maybe that you're going for will just nod along and believe you because you're kind of conforming to this idea that they already have and like driving it further and further in, you know, to their synapses, right? Whereas like if you are a little bit out of the box, they don't really know how to read you. That's a harder path to take, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's not something I think everybody's like equipped to do or has like the courage necessarily to do, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Especially if you are focused on, if your main aim is becoming popular, your main aim is becoming, making money and selling out shows and getting movie deals and so on. Like you don't want to like buck the trend, because mm-hmm. it's probably going to result in you getting less opportunities at first or mm-hmm. people not knowing what to make of you, you know, or what, like what we can't package you because the packages are set and you don't fit the packages, you know? So I think it's a really complicated thing. And that, you know, I wrote a story for the Times back in like 2012, I think, about J-Lo, and she hadn't actually done a concert in the Bronx. Despite all the time that she'd spoken about the Bronx and being Jelly from the Block, she'd never done a concert there. And then she did one. And I went and interviewed a lot of people and it was like, how do you feel that all this time that she's like never been here, you know? And you got a lot of mixed reactions. There were people like, you know, we still love her. You know, even though this is kind of messed up, and other people like, she's fake, you know? I don't know. It's like, but at the end of the day, I think there are a big contingent of people who are just like proud of her that for whatever reason, whatever her real circumstances were, she is somebody from Puerto Rican from the Bronx who's like, quote unquote, made it. And so now she's in this other.
Yeah, I get that.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. It's an interesting thing, but it's something that I personally have always kind of had an aversion to, like, I just mm-hmm. feel weird overstating my background. If anything, I probably understate it in some way. So like, because I feel, you know, in a lot of ways it's a weird to like air out things that don't necessarily need to be
aired out. There's not, you know? Yeah, there's not usually a space where that can like be brought up typically.
Right. Maybe in a one-to-one conversation or, you know,
maybe.
What I mean? But like, if I just
you'd have to be having a deep, intimate conversation usually to bring like, you know, let me tell you, when my neighbor, he got shot $2 down from me. And let me tell you, we had a hard time. We were eating beans out of a can. Like, you just don't have those conversations usually at the bar, having a drink with your boy or whomever or at a, you know, work event. Like, you're not having, maybe eventually you're at a, you know, whatever, a dinner party, people leave, you're on your third glass of wine and just you start spilling a little and, wow, I didn't know all that about you. Okay, fair. But typically, there's not usually in like casual to like moderate levels of conversation where you're just going to like start talking about that. Typically.
Yeah.
Without it sounding weird, without it sounding awkward of like, well, you know, as a first generation, it's just like, all right.
Right.
I don't know, why are you saying this? Is it relevant to the conversation? It might be.
Right.
But typically, my impression is that it's usually not.
Yeah. And it
just sounds awkward.
And it's something that happens a lot. You know, I try to sort of poke fun at this in Javi's writings. He writes in this way, in that type of tone where he's like spilling to you his life and what could have happened and what he saw and how it's whatever. And it's something that I see, you know, a lot, especially when we had this like personal essay boom. And I think in some weird ways, like coming back, like New York Magazine is like every other day. It's like they're pumping out a personal essay, and it's like, what the fuck? We're back again.
Yeah. You know?
And I read some of these, and a lot of times I can't even finish them because I'm just like, did you need, like, why do we need to air all this out? Like, where is this going? You know?
I always feel super awkward. Like, anytime I've tried to write anything remotely kind of in that vein, it feels super narcissistic.
It feels
like I feel super awkward doing it. Like, and some people will push it or you should do it. I'm like, I'm not gonna say there's nothing interesting about me, but like, why would people care? Like, I just don't really understand. Like, it's, and then when I read it, I'm like, I mean, unless you're like a big figure, like if you're
right,
if you've held public office or like who's the senator, the guy that was the astronaut and he's the senator of Arizona now and his wife is Gabby Gifford and all that stuff. I want to read that story.
Yeah.
How did you go up to the moon? How did you come back? Right. Your wife gets shot. Then you run for Senate. You win the Senate. Like, that's a cool story.
Yeah.
Like, I want to hear all those things. Like, cool. I mean, I don't need to know. I don't need to read some big personal essay from someone that just spent 3,000 words writing about like, oh, all these things. Like, I don't know. It just, a lot of people like it though. It's a real thing.
These stories are popular, you know, so there's something to be said for them. And, you know, just like selling your story or, you know, framing it in a way like somebody, you know, like a celebrity might do, or it works. And it does give you this kind of currency. And so I think that's why people do it, you know?
I guess one of my final questions here is I guess, how do you think we can have this balance of, I want to say victimhood, but showing kind of our like raw parts, if you will, like maybe some of the stuff that many people would say is like, you know, you're a victim of this or this or this, of poverty or of, you know, racism or whatever. You know, like it's going to be different for the person they're going to have their own perception of it, you know, and that can evolve over time, how your family looks at it, how friends and people socially look at it, and then how other people look at it, your job or your career and things like that. And, I don't know, there's a lot of like kind of really gross ways in which we talk about it, but like, how do we, when we have the right space or when the right moments, you know, what do you think are ways we could talk about it without it being kind of like fetishizing or things like that about our traumas or things like that? How do we, I don't know. What do you think is sort of the space in which we can navigate that?
I think if that sort of sharing, if it's on the side of the person, right, that sort of sharing is happening in a way to connect, you know, or in a way to like broaden a conversation, not shut it down or not, you know, elevate yourself as the person who is to be listened to, then in a lot of ways, I think it can help, you know, it can give, add a perspective to a larger conversation that is probably missing and that probably needs to be there. And so, I think a lot of it is about intent. Same way where on the other side, if I'm a publisher or a film producer or an editor at a magazine, I'm sort of helping to craft a story in this way because I think it's going to add significance and like something missing from a conversation or a debate. You know, again, I think the intention is good, but if the intention is to go viral or the intention is to like, black and brown trauma's hot, like we got another one, you know,
right.
Or if the intention is, you know, on the speaker side, like I'm going to shut this person down so they, you know, play the card so they can't say anything and I win. Then I think then that's, you know, that's just like a really unhealthy way of kind of manipulating these things. You know, we're all products of where we come from, what we experience. And I think the people who have experienced the harshest things often have a sense of, at least I found, have a sense of like inner peace or strength or like fortitude that is a lot of times missing from maybe others sometimes, you know what I mean? And I think that like that is lost when we're just trying to win battles and win arguments, you know, we lose those perspectives because those people are maybe not going to be the ones like openly trying to share, but they might be the ones who, you know, might raise their hand and say, all right, you know what? I'm this, and this, you know, I know it because of what I've seen. Right. And because they're approaching it from that, you know, delivering it in that way from the stance of like, I'm not trying to beat you. I'm trying to educate you. I think people are more apt to listen than to be turned off or feel like they're just being pushed out of a conversation, you know? And so, yeah, I think for me, it's all about intent. Like that's how I think about it. Because I have written things where bits and pieces of my personal life have come out, but I really try to make it intentional. And so it feels like that kind of needed to be in there to explain the larger thing that I'm writing about. Not like I'm going to just throw it in there because I know it's going to, you know, it might interest you or it might get some play or what have you, you know, but that's how I approach it. And, you know, I don't know if that's sort of the right or the wrong way, but for me, that's how I can like, as somebody who has things I could share and try really hard to make sure I'm doing it in a way that's like productive. That's how I think about it.
Yeah, no, that's nice. Yeah, I'm a bit similar as well. Intention matters. And my thing is why am I sharing this? And what is the person going to do with the information?
Right.
That's how I usually look at it. When it's something personal, it's like, oh, I could share this, but I don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let me be very purposeful and, you know, and say, you know, there's, you know, this piece of my life that, you know, whatever. Oh, wow, I didn't know. It's like, yeah, you don't know because I didn't tell you.
Right.
That's on purpose.
Right.
And I think sometimes people overshare in this kind of like for various reasons. And I mean, there's the reverse too. I mean, sometimes people keep everything all in and I don't think that's good either.
Right.
But I do think if you're very purposeful about what you're doing and why you're trying to do it with the best intentions as you can, you know, I think that that's something to be said for. So the novel's great. What do you want people to get out of it? Obviously it's a fun story. It's a good story to read. So there's some of that for sure. Like most novels, but what do you want readers that pick it up and read it to really get out of it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I really had kind of ambitious aims with it. I wanted to tell a story that, like you said, would entertain you, keep you turning the pages, keep you interested, make you laugh, but also hopefully come away with, you know, some thoughts or questions about a lot of these bigger issues that we're getting at in the book. You know, I think if you finish reading and you sort of reevaluate how you have engaged with some of these ideas in the past or what you think about them, then for me, that's a win. You know, that's like that's what I was aiming for as well. But to try to balance that inside of a story that doesn't feel like I'm beating you over the head with what you're supposed to think.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's, for me, I just hope that people will read it, enjoy it, and maybe think about some of these characters and some of these decisions and what, you know, some of the real life implications they're speaking toward, and maybe come to their own conclusions about it, or just see it in a new light that maybe they hadn't seen it before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. And as I said earlier, I mean, it definitely, it's certainly readable. It is a story. It's, you know, it's, you definitely want to know what happens and you kind of get kind of connected with the characters and it just kind of just shines a light on a lot of things and gets you to think about it. And so it's fantastic in that way. It's not trying to push anything down anyone's throat or, you know, be super mean or critical about other things or push one idea or view. It is very much like, these are definitely all of the characters could be real people in the real world. Mm-hmm. And you could bump into them and it's like, oh, okay, cool. You know, like, and I think a lot of people have met pieces or some aspects of those characters. And so hopefully it's good, to get people to really think about the themes and the interactions people have with everyone. Andrew, this was so much fun. It's always nice doing change of pace for me. I talked to lots of different folks about different topics and it's always fun to do stuff like within art, whether it's creative writing or with fiction or with film or things like that. It's always fun for me to do a little bit different from the normal kind of episodes I do. So it's always such a treat. So big thanks for coming on. The book is fantastic. Everyone should go pick it up. And you're always welcome here anytime for the next one. Just hope it's not 10 years from now.
Me too, man. Thanks so much for having me, man. I really appreciate it. It was a great chat.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.